appears we've lost a few.
Yeah, everybody's celebrating the end of the world.
The end of the world?
Today's the end of the world, huh?
In the Mayan calendar, today's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Oh, so that means everything will, material nature will pull back and everything will become spiritual.
Yes, devotees, we are buying candles, so like big amounts. So we asked them, why would you do that? They said, today the sun will not rise, so we need candles. I said, okay, let's see.
Well, the good thing about it, they only need 3 days worth of candles, because after 3 days, everything will freeze anyway. So
that. No, they said that after 3 days, the sun will rise back.
Somehow.
Pretty not logical.
It seems to be an emotional. Let's see, grandmother's emotional. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Just a little more illusion. I mean, what would make it rise again? Because if it doesn't rise in the first place, why would it rise after that?
Some break, yeah.
Huh?
He needs some break.
He needs a break. The only one that got him to take a break was...
this lady.
Yeah, that lady. She's the only one that's ever done that. Wow. So how's it going in Central America?
You didn't check the enacted yet.
Wow, okay. So everyone's heading for China or something? Or?
Everybody's just celebrating because it didn't happen.
Oh, it didn't happen. I mean, it was supposed to happen today.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how do you... I mean, but that's here. How do you know it doesn't happen like when it hits New York or Las Vegas?
Still
or
waiting.
Or Los Angeles. Maybe that's it. It'll rise everywhere and then in Los Angeles just drop off. Fall into the ocean.
Or goes back.
Huh?
It goes back.
Yeah. Good.
Retrograde.
Yeah. Yeah. Today's the day.
Yeah.
Oh, it's supposed to happen on the equinox.
Yeah.
I mean, not equinox, but on the shortest day. But that's tomorrow. Isn't it? 21st, 22nd?
21st.
But today's 20th, no?
21st.
Today's 21st.
Yeah.
I got my watches now. I'm one day off. I would have missed the end of the world, see? Like that. Wow. Okay. Well, that's really amazing. Okay. Well, I mean, Y2K didn't work, so... I mean, it hasn't worked so far. I mean, they've already had it a few times. It's supposed to happen 100 AD, then it was supposed to happen 1000 AD, then they had the Y2K... So I'm not sure what's their next plan. Is it, after another 1,000 years? Then you always have all the guys that walk around with the posters, now it's the end of the world kind of things. You know? Okay. Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare The seventh step in the... Okay, so on the bottom of 32, dhyana. The seventh step in the practice of yoga is meditation. Meditation is an advanced state of concentration in which one single object of concentration flows without interruption. In this state, the mind becomes fully one-pointed. And by one-pointedness, the yogi can approach the supersoul. The process of withdrawal of the senses, concentration, and meditation can be compared to a river that originates when many small streams gather and merge into one large flow of water. The river then flows through hills and valleys without being stopped by bushes and rocks, and it then finds the plains, where it flows smoothly and harmoniously, passing through forests and villages until it reaches its final destination and merges with the sea. So it is with the process of meditation. At the initial stage, the senses and mind are withdrawn and made one-pointed. Then that one-pointed mind flows constantly towards one object without being distracted by petty emotions, thoughts, memories, and anxieties. Then it enters into the smooth, uninterrupted flow of the meditative state in which siddhi, supernatural powers are experienced. These are analogous to the villages through which the river flows undistractedly. At last, the mind ultimately enters samadhi and connects with the consciousness of the Supreme Soul. Right, so that's their process. Right? So we notice here is that for those who actually get to the super soul, means then they pass the siddhis. Right? So in other words, these mystic siddhis, those will come up first. Right? So only if they get past that, then they can get to the super soul. Otherwise, then the tendency is they'll get distracted by those. So we see many, many yogis, you know, go off at that point.
What does it mean? They go, they become enamored by that?
Yeah, they become distracted by the city, so...
They stop the practice.
Yeah, so then they stop the practice and consider that to be a goal, like that, you know. But otherwise, if they continue, then you go through that. Because it's always, all these processes that have this mystical element, they always have something like that to distract you or to, you know, get you distracted by something else or... You'll stop at that point. So it seems very great and special. Just like we were discussing, well, it's been quite a while, I think, discussing the martial arts, is that the first level is just the ordinary activities that you do to fight, right? And the second level is that special techniques or like hidden techniques, you know, how anything can be used like that. Then the third level is then you can do like mystical kind of things, you know, like they can jump very high, they can do all kinds of amazing stuff like that. Then the fourth is that the deity fights through you, right, the deity that you worship. And the fifth level is the deity just does the fighting.
Does fighting?
Huh?
On its own.
Yeah, like that. So that we can understand that Prahlad Maharaj was on the fifth level of martial arts. Because the deity did the fighting for him. He didn't even have to be involved. Like that. So see is that it's these lower levels and you have all the specialness and uniqueness and that. But when it gets to the top level, then it's just very sweet and pleasant. And so it's in between you get all these mystic siddhis and all that and get distracted. And then it'll come to the point where then it's just a interaction with the super soul. Yes.
What are the distractions on the bhakti path? Like if you compare to the saints?
Obstruction, well, it means you only have an anart, means at the point of anartha nivritti, where anartha nivritti basically anishta, cross, is that you have the aspect, well, it means you could actually take it earlier. One is the first one is that you'll think that because you know something, you know everything. That's the first one. The second one is that sometimes one's enthusiastic, sometimes one's not. Right? The third will be then one can't distinguish or can't decide between a path of more detachment or a path of engaging everything. You know, that's connected to you in the way of sense gratification in the Lord's service, right? Because it can be engaged, but at the same time, as you can see that you don't really need to do that. But it's okay if you do that, but you don't actually need to do that, and it would be better if you didn't do that. But at the same time, Shastras say it's all right to do that. You understand? So you just get stuck there. Then the next is that just, you know, Maya herself, that you're interested in Maya. So it's just a matter of, because she always presents things that you have always appreciated in the past. So then it's just at a point where you just say no. You know, so she's going to keep presenting until she's convinced that you're always going to say no. Right? You know, as long as you don't say no, then, you know, it's like the puppy. You know, if it gets away with it once, then it figures, why can't it do all the time? So you always have to be consistent with it. Then, okay. Right? So then the next is that one doesn't have any material distractions, but one is unable to be fixed in one's spiritual endeavors. In other words, one's ability to organize one's sadhana isn't so good. You know, you're going to get up early, 2 o'clock, chant all your rants for Mangalartik, and then you forgot to set the alarm. You know, stuff like that. You know? Yeah. You know, or it's, you know, you're going to get up, you know, get everything, get there, sit down, and then fall asleep. You know, stuff like that. So then, but it's still within the spiritual. It's not a material distraction. It's just the spiritual isn't so organized. Then the sixth level is where it is organized, and you do get results, and because of that results, it's recognized, and then you get facilities and respect and everything for that, and then you get distracted by that. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. So like that. So it means one has examples of that all along. One generally doesn't notice, but that's the difference. So yeah, that's there. Then the next one would be. I mean, before that, of course, would be the element of faith. You know, just the faith. So you have start developing faith, and everybody else is going to say, that's stupid, or why are you doing that, or what's wrong with your own religion? You know, all these kind of things they're going to say. You know? No? Yeah, of course. You know, it's just like that. You just sit down and have a bowl of chicken soup, and everything will be fine. Right? You know, you don't have to worry about it. You know, why are you getting into all these other things? What's wrong with your own religion?
What about Indians? What do they say to their kids?
Why would you be so traditional?
Just curious.
No, but there would be, you know, we're Hindus, we're this, we're that. Same kind of thing. Just that, you know, you change the accent, that's all. And then, okay, that would be that earlier, right? You have the element of not being able to appreciate devotees, right? So then one can't take advantage of Sadhu Sangha, right? Then now we mention in Bhajana Kriya, because the anarthas are the problems in Bhajana Kriya. Then basically once you get through that, then when you get Ruchi and you know, like that, generally there's not really much of problems. You know, it goes very quickly. So the only final thing is that just the leftover residue of not being so focused on Krishna. You know, what were we discussing this morning? You know, and then the element that, you know, I'm advanced or I'm a great devotee. Those are the final anarthas that you have to be careful of. Because one is that one thinks he's like Krishna, the other he thinks he's like the internal potency. Like that. But basically it just means not focused on Krishna enough. Right? But once one gets to this point of samadhi, then after that it goes very simply. You know, so that's like, you know, the term falling in love. You know, so then from that point then it just falls into it. So it goes easy. Yes, okay? Okay. Prayojana. Samadhi, spiritual absorption. The word samadhi is closely related to the word samahitam, which means the state in which all questions are answered, or the state in which one is established in one's true nature. out of curiosity regarding the basic questions that the mind wants to solve, the mind flits from one thought to another and becomes restless. But the moment the mind resolves its curiosity, it has no reason to wander here and there, and thus it naturally establishes itself in its true nature. Then the mind is in a state beyond the concept of language in which it is accustomed to think or produce modifications. Samadhi is a state beyond thinking and feeling in which the individual soul is linked with the Supreme Soul. In samadhi, one casts away all limitations and causations and enjoys eternal bliss and happiness. It is not a state of the dissolution of individuality. Yogis know samadhi as a mystical fulfillment of individuality. Right? They know at that point they're still individual. Right? It's just that later they may decide to merge into the Supreme. Right? But otherwise they know that they're an individual. Right? So it's just that means all the different things in the material world, the modifications of the mind, the absorption, all the different things of causation, right? You know, other than the Lord. You know, it's just there's no interest in all these things. It's just yourself and the Lord. Right? So that it is, you know, a very, what do you call it? Enjoys eternal bliss and happiness. The thing is, that's the stage basically of that Brahmananda, but it's in connection with the Lord. So you understand the Lord is the Supreme Brahman, but it's still not the same as devotional service in which you're performing activities on the same platform, but the association of other devotees, right? So that's then unlimited ocean beyond this. Right, so that's why then the discussions are there. What's actually beyond? Otherwise, one will be satisfied with this because there's no material problems. You've connected yourself back with the Supreme. But the point is unless you connect yourself back with the Supreme as person to person interacting in a relationship, then it's not actually going to get the taste that you're looking for. Right. So footnote 16. In Bhagavad Gita 6:20 through 23, the state of samadhi is described as follows. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. Right? In other words, the stage or that position of the self is very special. Right, so rejoicing the self, you're very satisfied being in that state. Right? In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there's no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Right. So now this being in Gita, and it's in 6:20, so it's on the position of meditation. So this could either be discussing the yogi, which we've just, what was described before, where they come to that position of that Brahman platform. But they're still an individual, and then, you know, so they're Brahman, and then there's the Supreme Brahman. So they're satisfied. Or it could mean the devotee. Right, so in either case, it's just describing the generic position of actually coming to the natural state of the living entity's position. Does this make sense? So as a devotee, it'll be a relationship to Bhagavan. For the yogi, it's in relationship to Paramatma. Does that make sense? So therefore, for the devotee, it's the highest state because that stage of appreciating the Lord is so much greater. Right? This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, by practice of yoga, one becomes gradually detached from material concepts. This is the primary characteristic of the yoga principle. Right. So in other words, to become detached from material concepts, that's what yoga is for, by connecting to the Supreme, because material concepts means seeing things without connection to the Supreme. Right? So yoga means connection to the Supreme. So then that means you're removing material concepts. Does that make sense? This is the primary characteristic of the yoga principle. And after this, one becomes situated in trance or samadhi, which means that the yogi realizes the supersoul through the transcendental mind and intelligence, without any of the misgivings of identifying the self with the supersoul. Right? So he doesn't have the problem of identifying with the material energy, but at the same time he's not identifying that he is the supersoul. Right? Because it says detached from material concepts. So the concept of the soul and the supersoul are the same. That's also a material concept. Right? So a real yogi means he gets beyond that, right? So the first stage is going to be you get distracted by mystic yogas. You know, it means mystic cities, right? The next stage is going to be you think you're the super soul, right? So if you can get beyond that, then you can appreciate the Lord as a person, right? Does that make sense? You know, I mean, we haven't discussed, you know, how you say, you know, throwing your, you know, doing something weird and, you know, can't walking for 3 days or anything like that, you know. It's in earlier stages. But we're just talking about, yeah. Yoga practice is more or less based on the principles of the Patanjali system. Some unauthorized commentators try to identify the individual soul with the supersoul, and the monists think this to be liberation. But they do not understand the real purpose of the Patanjali system of yoga. There is an acceptance of transcendental pleasure in the Patanjali system, but the monists do not accept this transcendental pleasure out of fear of jeopardizing the theory of oneness. The duality of knowledge and knower is not accepted by the non-dualist. But in this verse, transcendental pleasure realized through transcendental senses is accepted. And this is corroborated by Patanjali Muni, the famous exponent of the yoga system. The great sage declares in his Yoga Sutras 3:34, Purushartha shunyanam gunanam pratiprasava kaivalyam swarup pratishta va chitti shaktiriti. This chit shakti, or internal potency, is transcendental. Purushartha means material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end, the attempt to become one with the Supreme. This oneness with the Supreme is called Kaivalya by the monist. But according to Patanjali, this Kaivalya is an internal or transcendental potency, by which the living entity becomes aware of his constitutional position. In the words of Lord Chaitanya, the state of affairs is called Chaitodarpana Marjanam. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antilila, 20:12. Or clearance of the impure mirror of the mind. This clearance is actually liberation, or Bhava Maha Devagni, Nirvapanam. The theory of Nirvana, also preliminary, corresponds with this principle. In the Bhagavatam 2:10:6, this is called Sarupena Vyavastiti. The Bhagavad Gita also confirms this situation in this verse. Right? So means this is the preliminary position. One comes to that liberated platform, but it's still in connection with the Lord. This other idea that you'll come to that platform not in connection with the Lord isn't really a realistic position. Right? After nirvana or material cessation, there is the manifestation of spiritual activities. Because we'll mention that also, because nirvana means the cessation of material activities, but that means the beginning of transcendental activities. Right? So that's the difference. So these terms up to this point are the same. There's no difference in what you're using the path of jnana, you're using the path of yoga. To get to the point of liberation, we'll be following the same process. But we're not separately endeavoring. We're simply engaging in Krishna's service, so therefore there's nothing material. Right? So by the process of understanding our relationship with the Supreme, right, through that yoga, and from becoming detached from Maya because we're attached to Krishna, right? So the path of yoga and of jnana are both accomplished. Right? And then there's no... So the process is the same. Does that make sense? So our process and the process of an actual, monist is the same. Right? The difference will be is on whether you're including the Lord in it or not. But the actual mechanical process is the same. It's not different. After nirvana or material cessation, there is the manifestation of spiritual activities or devotional service to the Lord, known as Krishna consciousness. In the words of Bhagavatam, Surupena Vyavastiti, this is the real life of the living entity. Maya or illusion is the condition of spiritual life contaminated by material infection. Liberation from this material infection does not mean destruction of the original eternal position of the living entity. Patanjali also accepts this by his words, Kaivalyam Surupena Pratishta Va Chitti Shaktiriti. This Chitti Shakti, or transcendental pleasure, is real life. This is confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12 as Anandamayo Bhyasat. This natural transcendental pleasure is the ultimate goal of yoga and is easily achieved by execution of devotional service, or bhakti yoga. Right? Through the best practice of yoga in this age, the best practice of yoga in this age is Krishna consciousness, which is not baffling. A Krishna conscious person is so happy in his occupation that he does not aspire after any other happiness. There are many impediments, especially in this age of hypocrisy, to practicing hatha yoga, jnana yoga, and jnana yoga. But there's no such problem in executing karma yoga or bhakti yoga. Okay, that's the end of that. We'll have the end of the page. Yes. Okay, do we see that there's not a problem in describing the yoga system or any of these systems, because they have some aspect that is the same up to a certain point. You know, like there's not a problem in the difference between getting from here to, you know, Bamanpakur, or getting from here to Krishnagar, or getting from here to Ranagat, or getting from here to Calcutta. Right? The process of getting to Calcutta includes all the others. Right? So it's not that when we get up to Bamanpakur, then you say, well, this is not the process of getting to Calcutta, this is the process of getting to Bamanpakur. Does that make sense? You all know what I'm talking about. You know what Bamanpakur is? That's the first village up the road. Like that, you know. Okay. Just in case, you know. Some people don't. Ranagat, it's like halfway to Calcutta. Okay. Technically it's Kalyani, but whatever. That one you might not know about.
In a certain point of the Gita, we are discussing pure devotional service.
Yes.
And then karma yoga is brought in. I think it's chapter 9.
means you have that the Gita is describing yoga, right? So actual yoga is bhakti yoga, but it has the different parts. Like I was saying before, is that when you're discussing the shakti, you can discuss various aspects of it and appreciate it. But when it's all put together and how it functions together, that's where it becomes bewildering. Right? Because the question was, if it's a chinti shakti, or means inconceivable, how is it you're able to discuss it and we can comprehend the different aspects? Because if it's uncomprehensible, how are we comprehending it? But that we're only comprehending the certain parts one at a time. We're not comprehending the whole thing working all together. Does that make sense? So, after it means any time, but especially after it's the third and fourth chapter, or actually at third and fifth chapter, then you're going to be describing the activities of devotional service. Because karma means the activity of devotional service. Jnana means the knowledge of devotional service. Jnana means that a focus in meditation in devotional service. Right? But it doesn't have the forms of karma, jnana, and yoga. It means to think about Krishna, we don't have to sit down in a yoga posture. Right? To practice the aspects of jnana and knowledge. We don't have to, you know, go to Varanasi and take sannyas or something, or go to the Himalayas. right? And karma, we don't have to, you know, start doing a big Shrauta Yajna and Soma Yajna or something like that. You know, it's just, the point is karma means activities, right? Gyan means knowledge, and Dhyan means meditation. So those are all part of devotional service. So that's what it'll be talking about, right? Just that aspect of Bhuti Yoga.
Because here he mentions that for Jnana Yoga and for Astanga Yoga, it will be very difficult.
Yes.
But not so much for Bhakti Yoga and Karma Yoga.
Yeah. Because the yogi has stopped the senses. He's dealing in the early stages as karma yoga, so that part's easy. That's what people are attracted to, right? People are attracted to, you know, sitting down, doing some asanas, doing some breathing like that, you know, or, you know, just clearing the mind a little bit, but not too seriously, you know, because it means you're the person is there and, okay, meditate, clear the mind. All this is just clear the mind enough that you relax. And then once you're relaxed and comfortable, no one's complaining that all the thoughts are coming back. Right? The yoga teacher's not saying, don't let any thoughts come back. Don't remember all your material attachment. He's not saying that. Said that, empty studio. Right? So they're not saying that. So no one's actually interested in those things. But the physical, little breathing, it's good for the health. You know, it's, you know, a nice place, it's a nice environment, nice experience. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And so they get into these things a little bit, but not seriously. You know, so whenever Prabhupada's describing it, he's describing the actual, real, serious Astanga Yoga, or a serious Jnana Yoga path. He's not describing these other, he does, you know, they're just playing around, they're like games. He always mentions that. It's not some you know, game like this. So the thing is those real systems, they're the closest to the actual devotional systems. So the point is that aspect is easy, the karma aspect is easy, but when you get to the actual pulling in the senses and meditation and that, no one really talks about that part. Right? Because that doesn't mean sitting down and meditate on a candle for 20 minutes or, you know, oh, now you're very advanced, you have 45 minutes or, you know, like this. Or even if you're, you know, Zen and you're 7 hours, so what? That's 7 hours. We're talking 36,000 years here. You know, so 7 hours, what's that? You know, big deal. So an actual yogi wouldn't be impressed. Right? So the thing is the yoga, that aspect, and gyan means there's no engagement of the senses, so they're very, very difficult. But the path of karma, there's engagement of the senses, so it's actually easy. That's why the yogis and gyanis always, oh, karma, yoga, that's lower. It's lower for a materialist, but for a devotee, then, you know, it's the best. Because you're engaged in activities, that's natural. Why is the other one more difficult? Because it's not natural. I say, if it's natural, that's easy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. It's just, that's the natural position. Like kids, they like to play all day. So for them to sit down and do their homework, that's hard. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is if they can engage their activities in Krishna's service, then it's done. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then the devotional process is the easiest. Because it's using that simpler kind of approach, but you're getting actual transcendental result, while the others are using a very difficult approach. You know, it's just like, let's say you want to get to the top of the mountain, right? Then there's one ridge, it's very easy, you just walk straight up it. Right? I mean, it's a little difficult, it is a mountain, but you know, okay, if you're new, you take that one. But the other guys, they have to go up the backside, which is practically impossible. Right? You know, if you want to say, I got to the top of Everest, right, you go up the front face. No, but they have to go up the north face. Right? Does that make sense? Because the other people, oh, they'd be impressed. The guys who've actually gone up, well, which face did you go up? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. They try to make it hard because it's actually one of the things of the enjoyments in the material world is to put yourself in a dangerous situation and then get out of it. You understand? That's the fun, you know. You know, you can't just ride along on your skateboard down the road like that. You know, your dog's there. He has to run, and you can just stand there, right? You know, that's you know, fat guys do that, right? You have to go down the thing and go up until you're in the space, right? You could fall down, break your neck, break anything. But then when you don't, you land on the board and come back the other way. Whoa, that was great, yeah? You know, so that's the whole point. You put yourself in a dangerous situation, and then, you know, you get out of it. You know, you jump out of the airplane and you fall for 10,000 feet. Then you pull the chute. You know, then that was great. You know, you pull the chute. It doesn't open. Not as great. You know. You know what I'm saying? So all these different things is there. You know, you go into the reef. You know, the sharks are there. This and that. But you didn't get, you know, chewed up by one of them. Then it's great. You understand? So there's always the thing of putting yourself in a dangerous position and then getting out of it. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it means there's rules. You know, the car can only have this much power. It can only have this much weight. It can only have all these things. Why? Because a lot of people don't get out of it. Right? They crash and they die. So that's not fun. Right? But if you really wanted to make a rule that would solve all the problem of people dying, ban Formula One, ban racing. Right? You can't race. Nobody gets killed. No, but then that's not fun. The point is to get on the edge where you could be killed, but you're not. So they make all the rules on how to get out of it. You understand? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole process. So that's the thing. Therefore, the yogis and jnanis will feel they're in a superior position because it's so much more difficult. Like that. When something's just so easy, you know? You know, the guys come there and they're trying to open the knot and spend their whole life, you know. And then, what's his name? Guy with the curly hair. You know, he just comes along, pulls out his sword and just cuts the knot in half. It's open, finished. Direct, straightforward. The other guys didn't think of that. You know, it's too easy. You know, he's got to have a complicated, you know. Not Attila the Hun. A little farther south. Alexander. Yeah, he's always. You just cut the knot in half, you know, it's like that, open. Anyone's got any complaints with that? No, we're fine. Okay, he's the emperor, here he is. Okay, cool. Okay. Does that make sense? So it's just somehow they want to make it complicated when it's actually very easy. Krishna consciousness is very easy, we try to make it complicated. More rituals, more this, more that, you know. But no, it's very simple. Just remember Krishna. Arrange your life in such a way that you always remember Krishna and never forget him. That's it. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it means all these parts are discussed separately because they're all important. Right? It means activity without knowledge doesn't have any meaning, but knowledge without activity also. Right? It means, and you have knowledge and activity, but what's your goal? So what are you meditating on? So you need all three. But it's just a matter of that all three are connected to Krishna, then it becomes perfect. If it's not connected to Krishna, then not so perfect.
Yeah. As you're mentioning, the Bhakti Yoga has that surrender element, which is the actual difficulty compared to that.
Yeah, that's true. That's the real difficulty. Because for them, it's their false ego, it's not difficult. Right? Because to do something simple. Because the point is the little kids on their tricycles have just as much fun as those guys on those fancy race bikes that have no gears and no brakes and no nothing. You know, they probably even have more fun, right? You know, their knees don't hurt. You know, so it doesn't get cold. You know, it's nice. There's no traffic. You know, you're just running around the backyard. So, you know, and if you fall off, you don't get hurt. You know. You know what I'm saying? So, but somehow or another, it's just considered, no, it has to be lower. You know, this is more sophisticated. This is more developed. This is more... But it's not. Yeah. In different yoga traditions, this state is called soundless sound. What is this called? Okay. Soundless sound, the state of silence, or the highest state of peace and happiness, right? Soundless sound.
The door of no door.
Yeah, the door of no door. Learn it all, forget it all. Yeah, so these are all. There are two stages of samadhi, sabija and nirbija. Sabija samadhi means samadhi with seeds. In this state, the sense of individual interest separate from the supersoul is retained, and the seeds of desire and attachment will still remain in latent form. In the state of nirbija, or seedless samadhi, however, the individual consciousness is completely united with the supreme soul. This may be understood in two ways. The yogi surrenders all separate interests and serves only the interests of the Paramatma. He becomes a pure devotee of God, and by the Lord's mercy gains entry into this eternal spiritual realm, Vaikuntha. But if the yogi identifies with the Paramatma as his own self, he is absorbed into the body of the Lord. This is called Ishvara Sayuja, merging into the Supreme Lord Vishnu. The first is a devotional union with God. The second is non-devotional. Generally, the followers of the Patanjali Yoga system aspire for the second kind of union. So here the sabija means at this point there is no desires, but they're not gotten rid of. So once you finish this, then one will go back. So then higher is the nirbija, without these desire seeds. But then the problem comes is that, is it, meaning it's connected to service to the Supreme Lord, or it's a matter of merging into the Supreme Lord. Right? So that's the... So for us, we can see, is the process the same, but then it will end up in nirbija samadhi, you know, meaning the personal. Right? It won't come out to be anything else. Otherwise, the sabija, then they'll go back to, you know, mystic cities and stuff like that. Okay, footnote 17. Yes.
Nirbija would be only for the devotees?
No, it means nirbija also means merging into the supreme. So you've given up the material desires, means of the specifics. You still maintain that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So technically, you could say nirbija only is devotional. But within the Patanjali Yoga system, you will have these two divisions, because the nirbija that they're talking about is still a higher state than the sabija. Right?
What would it be, sabija?
Sabija would mean that one has the individual interest. It means you see yourself in the supersoul, but you're on the transcendental platform, but you maintain that identity because you have some purpose after that, other than the spiritual activity. But nirbija means you give up that separate identity. So then the two levels is you give up the separate identity, so there's no difference, you know, on the physical platform. The other is you give up that there's physical difference, but there's no difference in the mood. So that's the devotee. So he's just acting to please the Lord. Right? So the other is they merge, it's like the Brahma body. But the difference is the Brahma body just merges into Brahman, but here they're merging into the body of the Lord. So technically, it's considered by us a lower position, because the Brahma bodies don't know about the form of the Lord, so them merging into Brahman, that's one thing. They're just, that's all they know, right? That's just a natural state. But the yogi knowing the personal form of the Lord and then merging there instead of serving the Lord, that's even worse. Is that? So technically, the real nirbija is devotional service. But as we were discussing previously, that when you take an aspect of devotional service and don't see it in connection with devotional service, then it takes on another name, right? And it has other, it gives other goals, and sometimes you have to fill in the blanks, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So then Patanjali, actually, he gives a proper option to his followers.
Yes, but it's just most don't take it.
It's not taken.
No, it is there.
Yeah,
it means, in other words, all of these, on one level, all of these sages who write these six systems, they know what the actual system is. Hmm. But they're writing the Vedic methodology in such a way that persons who wouldn't be interested in that would at least be interested in following the Veda and following the Vedic, you know, authority and lifestyle. You know, because you have at other times in these different personalities, they know what the correct thing is, but they just, one is they profess using this method. But the point is, even the method can be used in the proper way. Just like logic can be used properly in devotional service, as we see Raghunath Das Babaji is using it properly, right? While Vrajanath wasn't using properly, and by habit still has a tendency to get overly distracted by logic. Right? So you have the example. So, but logic has its place. You know, atomic theory, we generally don't discuss it much because most people don't relate to that element of breaking everything down to atoms and therefore everything just disappears. It gets too freaky for people. You know, so therefore we don't use it so much. It's just, it's here, you just change it from looking at it not separate from Krishna to seeing it in relationship to Krishna. But if there's a problem in seeing it in relationship to Krishna, you're still attached, then you can break it down to the atoms, then it's kind of like, you know, what are you going to do with a big pile of atoms, right? You know, so therefore, then you lose that interest. Then you can start to see, oh, I should look at it spiritually. And then you can switch over. So it has its place. But all these have is just a specific place. You know, the shankhya of being able to analyze how the world works so that you can appreciate, you know, when, how mechanically you became distracted or how mechanically to engage the mind in the devotional process when the mind doesn't want to. Right? So they become useful when it's not just so easy just to do something for Krishna. Right? As long as that's there, then there's no problem. But when that's not there, then you have to take the actual problem and fix it. You know what I'm saying? If the machine works nicely, you just use it. But if there's a problem, then you have to, you know, specifically analyze it and then deal with that specific problem. So that's what these systems are actually for. But they've been, you know, they're being misused, that they're complete systems and that they can get the actual, they can make the soul happy when it actually can't. Is that okay?
So Maharaj, this brings us back to the point that every school, every thought is actually a misuse of one of the parts of this complete knowledge.
Of bhakti, yes. Yeah, it means, yeah, that's the whole point. Is that ultimately the only philosophy is Vedanta. But people will just take certain parts of it and then do, you know, it's just like you have your you know, average kind of like intellectual. They pulled this from this one, that from that one. They have their different quotes that they kind of pieced all that together to make their own philosophy. So it's not that they're really interested in the whole thing. They just want that one part. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, the one, it takes a village to raise a child. But nobody really cares about how African villages work. You know, like that. But they just like that particular quote, you know. Does that make sense? So like that, they just pick and choose as they like. So like that, then all the options for picking and choosing have been given. Right? In other words, these are the major schools that they're complete in themselves, that you're picking only this part of the devotional process and not seeing it in relationship to the Lord. And so then it has a consistency. Right? Once you leave these six, there's a lack of consistency. So that's why we say they're incomplete. We don't say they're inconsistent. Mayavad, we say, is illogical and all these things. Because it's not actually a Vedic system. Right? It means it's actually Buddhism. So it's not there. But they're, you know, the Vedic positions and a lot of the other stuff that they do about explaining how to become liberated, that we'll say is the same. But the point is that liberation is the end of the line. That's where they have a problem. And their concept of liberation is not real. Does that make sense? So you have the similarities. But then when you go outside of that, then you have all the different world religions and philosophies where they just take bits and pieces from here and there, and they're not very developed. They're not developed at all like this. You know. Is that sense? Yeah.
Or is it then drops more out of intelligence, more into sentiment?
Yeah. Or the intelligence is more controlled by ignorance. Like that. Okay. Footnote 17. In the Bhagavad Gita 6:47, the Lord states that the pure devotee is the highest yogi. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Right, so here, he always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service. Right, because the other one may think of the Lord, but they don't necessarily abide in him or render loving service. Does that make sense? So all aspects of the Satchitananda are all covered. While the other ones just, deal with, I'm the soul, and here's the super soul. So they never actually render service, and their goal is not to please the Lord. Right? So they're not rendering devotional service, because that would be prayojana, means as ananda. Right? But they just want to leave it as Brahman. Right? Or, okay, thinks of me within himself, but always abides in me. So that means he's always identifying as the Lord's servant, or he's always... Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, the culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Right? So that's just saying it in the positive way rather than the negative that we were discussing before. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All of the yogas are progressions towards the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruit of results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stages is called jnana yoga. All right, so still, it's karma yoga, but when knowledge and detachment are more prominent, then it's not called karma yoga anymore, it's called jnana yoga. But it's still the same process. Right? So it still means without fruit of results. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the super soul by different physical processes, and the mind is on him, it is called astanga yoga. And when it surpasses the astanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it is called bhakti yoga, the culmination. Because otherwise, before that, you're working on below Brahman, you come up to the platform of Brahman, then you come up to the platform of Paramatma. Right? In other words, it's mundane but pious. Then it comes to liberation, then it comes to the super soul. So when it comes to yoga being done in connection with the personality of Godhead, right, in devotion, then that becomes the highest. Factually, bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas, right? Because they're all parts of the process of bhakti yoga. So they need to be analyzed. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Right, so if he's stuck at that one point and that's all the form that he wants and he only wants the results from that point, then he's called a karma yogi, jnana yogi, jnana yogi, raja yoga, hatha yogi, etc. Right, depending on where he stops on the path. Right, it means if he follows yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, like that, but stops there, right, then he's known as a... Those things hurt. Then he's known as a hatha yogi. Right? Does that make sense?
Right? Hmm. Why is it that to analyze bhakti yoga minutely one has to understand these other yogas?
Because those other yogas are the mechanical parts of bhakti at that point.
So without it?
Means the whole thing is bhakti yoga. Means we could describe the whole thing as bhakti yoga and not even bother with all these other parts. We would just explain it that this is this stage in devotional service. Right? But those points have already been defined by the scriptures and all that. And because that aspect is prominent in that area, it's explained there. Does that make sense? You know, just like we were saying, is that it's not that brahmacharis, vanaprastas, and sannyasis don't give in charity, right? But it's just they don't necessarily have a whole lot to give in charity, you know? Or it's not that they don't take care of guests. Does that make sense? But what they offer is very simple. But the grihastha has full facility to take care of guests and to give in charity. So therefore, the process of taking care of guests and charity is described in connection with them. You know, it's not that, you know, the common person's not protecting people, right? The household is protecting his family. But it's not on the level of that of the king, right? So the king is doing it. So therefore, protection is discussed on that level. You know, everybody's studying, but then the volume or the depth or the degree is the most in the brahminical, so it's described there. Does that make sense? So wherever it's the most developed, that's where it's described. You know what I'm saying? The analyzation of the material world so that you can get out of that, that's Shankhya. So that's one of the processes you can use in the devotional process. Because it's described so nicely in Shankhya, it's just called by that and use their terminology and everything. Does that make sense? Like, we use logic, but we use the same terminologies and everything that Gotama uses. Because he's already developed it. Why do you need to develop it again? You know what I'm saying? You're a devotee, you want to blend something in your kitchen. You don't have to make your own blender. You use the one that's already there. You know, and there's the on button. You call it the on button because they call it the on button. They call this the lid. You call it the lid. This is the cord. They call it the cord. What's the problem? You know, it's not that. Does that make some sense?
Yes.
You sure?
Yeah. No, what I don't understand is bhakti is the whole process. It's complete in itself.
Yes, but you're describing these individual portions of it.
But we can go without it as well. Not to describe, but not to use those processes, like?
No, it's just a matter of the terms. The terms are the terms from devotional service, but they become famous by this person doing it.
So
just like you have a musician. He's sung a song. He's very famous all over the world for it. He's gotten awards. He's gotten this. It's, you know, like this. But actually, he didn't write the song. You know what I'm saying? But nobody knows that song by that original person. It's known by the song by whoever else has sung it. Does that make sense? So, because it's there, then that's what's used. So, these are, you know, great personalities and that have written these great sages and all that. And so then we just use those terminologies. It's already done. Does that make sense? It means Gotama has gone to all the trouble to define nyaya. So we don't need to come up with something new. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. The wheel's there. But the point is the wheel is part of the devotional process. You know what I'm saying?
I'm just thinking that devotees, they usually, because they don't study so much in depth, so they say that Prabhupada, he never, he actually didn't want us to study all that, and he made it so simple, everything. Prabhupada did use all those terms.
He uses everything.
He just didn't specify that this is from here and this is from there.
No, but even there he says, he's quoting direct verses from Patanjali Yoga Sutras. It's just devotees don't catch that.
Yes.
You know, it's just like you can read about Sambandha Abhidaya and Prayojan a million times and not know that's what you're reading, and then when you find out what it is, then you know, oh, Prabhupada's always talking about that. Mm-hmm. Or devotees say, oh, well, you know, we're not interested in Varnashram. Practically every purport, Prabhupada's talking about Varnashram. You know, so, you know, it's just, they're not studied, so therefore they don't study in a systematic way, therefore they don't catch these things. But that's what Prabhupada wanted. He was expecting there to be devotees that have already gotten the degree of Bhaktivedanta in 75, right? You know, so that's, you know, 37 years ago. But I think to today, there's not technically anybody who has that degree. You understand? But that's what he was expecting, because he wanted the devotees to systematically study. You know? That was the idea. The Bhagavatam class, that's Sadhu Sangha. So you're sitting and getting everyone's realization and all that. So, of course, it is a study, and just by going to that, then one will learn. But he expected there would be some study other than that, because that was more the Sadhu Sangha. Yes.
So, can we say that because we have inclination towards karma more than towards jnana, that's why it's not happening in our movement?
It could be, but I think it's just not the value, because you see, it's not, if you say, I'm going back to university, nowadays, it's not an uncommon thing that people won't say why you're doing that. They'll just, oh, okay, nice. You know, what are you studying? You know, what are you going to do with it? Well, previously, you were going to school, and they say, oh, that's useless. Just join and, you know, that's a, like that. But nowadays, it's, no, yeah, okay. You know, it's considered a viable option. So it's not that studying is there, but, you know, studying the books, that's another thing. Because they don't understand what you're getting from it. See, what is there. If you go through, it's just not appreciated what's there.
Yeah.
Bhagavatam is the second six cantos.
Second six.
Yeah.
I think we're still going through the first six. The Mayapur Institute and other institutes.
Yeah. Generally, they haven't gotten past the first six, and even that's only the last few years. That's the last few years. Sorry?
They are getting there.
Getting there, yeah. Slowly. Yeah. But the point is, you know, some value it, so therefore it's going on. You know. It's not that there's not devotees who've studied up to that, but just as a organized system, then we don't have much going on. I probably wanted every center to be a center of education. That was the idea. So, you know.
Maharaj, did we talk about Varnashram also? Did Prabhupada mention that it should be rural all the time? What are devotees got this idea about?
Because that's the only thing that they can catch out of Varnashram, is generally who's in charge and economics and who's growing what, and that's about it. But even that, you see, it's only a few people. It means very few identify Varnashram as actually a valuable system. Because it's a social system, but it's a social system out of goodness. And when one's grown up in a social system from passion and ignorance, then it's hard to relate to, right? And then of aspects that you do have from the Varnashram system that people can relate to is, okay, there's an administrator, he's in charge, okay? And there's businessmen, they're making money, right? But then there's all the Ugra Karma, the bad guys. So the nice guys who are making money are out in the villages, you know, growing cabbages, like that. And so then... you know, growing cabbages in the modern scenario and Varnashram of growing cabbages, then that kind of seems to relate. So then Varnashram becomes growing cabbages. Go figure. You know, it's a matter of guna and karma. It's not so much the environment in which you're doing it. Right? That's the thing, is there's ideal environment, but it's not defined that Varnashram is only in a particular environment. Because even if you say, well, it's only Varnashram if it's based on, you know, an agrarian thing, but the world goes on because they're growing food. They don't grow food, the world doesn't go on. So you would have to say, ultimately, indirectly, even the modern economic system is still based on the agrarian. you don't dig it out of the ground or grow it from the ground, it's not going on. Oil still comes out of the ground, you know. The potatoes are still coming out of the ground. Maybe they grow them in water now instead of in the ground. But the point is it's still the same principle. Just it's been, you know, more distant from it. You know what I'm saying? Cement is still just lime that's been processed. You know, instead of taking, you know, weeks to dry, it dries in one day. That's the only difference. They just figured out how to speed up the drying process. But otherwise, it's still lime. You know, steel's still out of the ground. You know, plastic is still a transformation of oil. You know, it's just, it still ultimately goes back. It's just a few steps past. That's the thing. When it's directly connected to the earth, and that it has the least amount of illusory aspect. As it becomes processed, you know, each step that is processed, it becomes more and more illusory. Like if I make a house out of mud, right, it has the simplest form, right? But now if I take that mud and fire it so I get bricks, then it has the next step of illusion to it. You know what I'm saying? So that's all. It's as all it is how far processed it is. You know, now if I extract from that earth and now I have metals, then that's the next stage. Yeah, so just slowly it gets more. So all they're doing is just putting themselves farther and farther on that path of the illusory element. But it's still, origin is still back. And they can't function outside God's laws and you know, function within the creation. But the problem is that because we are attached to a certain kind of element, then we'll say no. But it's still the same thing. You know, it's like one animal lives in a tree, one lives on the ground, one lives in a hole, one lives in the water. But they all live somewhere. So the one in the living on the hole is complaining about the one living in the tree. You know, like that. You know, it's all. You know, or let's say the beaver, right? They make a dam and they live in that dam and all that. But now by making that dam, you know how many living entities then get disturbed? Right? So all it is the ones that are anti-dam are out there, you know, picketing against the beavers, you know, that's all. So it's all the same, you know what I'm saying? They're all animals. That's all. So until one recognizes that the reason that the growing cabbages are nice, because that's the natural lifestyle that according to the laws of God, then you have some basis to go on. But if it's just that it's good, it's nice, it's you know, it's moral, it's you know, everybody can understand all these kind of stupid things, you know. Then, you know, maybe saying 2012, you know, all these kind of things. It's all useless, you know. It's like, well, where does it come from? You know, if 2012 was the poem, don't you think it would be in the scriptures? You know, the Bhagavatam wouldn't be mentioning it. Yeah. You know, I would say everything goes up here, and then in 2012, hey, that's it. You know, but you know, then there's a big gap between now and what do they do? Because it's the end of the world; they have to import people for when Kali comes or something like that. You know, so how does this work out? You know,
maybe they fall from other planets.
Yeah, maybe they fall from other planets because they're not supposed to be here. They're, you know, supposed to be on the other planets. Then that's the problem. And,
okay. All right. So about this last point you made. So the only reason Prabhupada wanted community farms is for us to realize this point you've mentioned, that you follow God's law.
Yeah, you're more in connection with that. Also, because to function in a city, you actually have to be quite sophisticated, right? Have to a lot of good qualities, right? Like you can't be too crazy in a city, right? Cities are known for being more crazy, but the individuals themselves actually can't be that crazy. But if you're living in a rural environment, you can be really crazy, and it works. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's the thing. Is it doesn't matter. Nobody cares, you know? You go out and dig a hole or, you know, do something crazy. No one minds that you go out and dig a hole in the middle of the street. People got problem with that, you know?
It's harder to dig.
Huh? Yeah, it's harder to dig, but you know, hey, it means that you can get it. It's the weekend, you can borrow your dad's jackhammer, you know, like that. You know, something like that. You know what I'm saying? So each one has its own. So therefore we see the kind of persons that are in the city are more sophisticated, more this and that. So it's natural that a lot of people need the village environment. Plus, there it's also when the human being lives in that rural environment, that's or in that natural environment, that's considered sattvic. Living in the cities anyway is considered rajasic, though you can live a sattvic lifestyle within that rajasic environment. Right? Just like people live a tamasic lifestyle in that sattvic environment. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's just a matter of you need all of that, but there's going to be very minimal in the city, and then there's going to be much more. You have one main city, and then you have all kinds of towns, and then a few villages, and then it just goes out from there. You know, so that's the natural thing, because the administration has to be have that location. So that's where your big main city is. You know what I'm saying? Because so many people are there, because you have to have the administration, you have to have the bureaucracy, you have to have the army, you have to have all the other offices and everything going on and all the supplies and everything. So that requires a city. You know what I'm saying? So the point is Varnashram can be applied from the city down to the village. Right? So the farm then is a very nice place in which you can do things, be engaged and all that. But the problem is the at the present time people are too passionate to live in the village, but not enough sattvic to actually live in a city. You know what I'm saying? So they're unqualified for both.
So in a way, could we say that a lot of people discussing Varnashram, I talked with you, we tend to do what the yogis do. You take one part.
Yeah, you take one part. Because Varnashram nowadays simply means having a farm and growing things. And specifically vegetables. But that you can do anywhere. You know what I'm saying? We can grow vegetables here. We don't have to, like that, have a whole farm to grow vegetables. You need a whole farm to grow grains. Nobody's talking grains. There are, basically, nobody's talking grains. And nobody's growing grains. That's farming. You grow vegetables, the housewife can grow it in the backyard. You know, you have a place as big as what is here, your family's got vegetables. Like that. It's not rocket science. Grains, now that's farming.
Especially because the amount of money you can get.
You know what I'm saying? It means if you're trading in commodities, do you trade in pumpkins or that? No, it's grains. Yeah. Right? You know? Soybean, corn, rice, wheat. That's where commodities are. You know?
To make profit from the grains, you need very extensive areas because the profit per area is small.
Smaller, but also you have to know how to grow. You can also get more from it. But the point is if it's not valued, it's not happening. The land is there. There's like one of the biggest shocks I ever had was being in, you know, you're in Manhattan, which is just wall-to-wall concrete, right? You know, a couple of years back, they decided to plant some trees like that, you know? So if you see, you see pictures of it, there's trees. They're not much bigger than this, you know, a little bit bigger like that. But that's all, because they only planted them recently, you know? So then, but then you drive to the boroughs outside. So there's another, like, 20 minutes, half an hour of, you know, it's spreading out a little bit, more factories and a little more space and all that. And then suddenly it stops, and you're out in the forest. I mean, literally, forest. Half an hour drive outside of Manhattan, you're in forest, and that's the way it is. You could drive from there to the North Pole through forest. You know? So that was a big shock.
Did it reflect it?
No, it's always been there. It still is there. Just everybody talks about New York City. There's a little dinky island there that everyone packs into. The whole world is empty. People aren't living there. You know? There's plenty of space. So the space to grow things is all there. Just nobody wants to do it. Like that, because it's a simple lifestyle. So you're only going to be satisfied in the simple lifestyle if you have very good quality of relationships. So if the quality of relationships and devotional service is strong, then you're comfortable out in the village. Right? But if not, they live in the city, but they don't still have the same lack of qualifications. So they're still dissatisfied, but the concept, the mode of passion, I'll get something more, is there. So then they have faith that by living in the city, I'll get something more. Because most all the people who discuss Varnashram, they all live in cities. They set up farms, and they stick some brahmachari or somebody out there, you know. But they don't live there. You know what I'm saying? One or two are right out there in the boonies. You never hear about them like that. And they do their own stuff, but who knows about it? Like, you know, what's that place in Maharashtra? It's way out there in the middle of nowhere. Can't remember what the place is. It's connected with the Pune kind of Chopati scene.
Belgium?
Yeah. But you hardly ever hear about it. And who's been there?
What's that
is? Yeah. I mean, who this? Yeah, basically, brahmacharis live out there.
What's there?
It's a farm out in the middle of nowhere based on self-sufficiency. So they do a lot of self-sufficiency and stuff there. You know, build stuff, this, that.
Now it's becoming very popular.
Yeah.
The GPC went there, everybody's talking.
But that's because there's a lot of talking about it. But otherwise, a few years ago, the same place was there, but nobody
knew.
So you have to advertise. In other words, you have to do all the modern stuff to get people interested in.
Yeah.
What's that?
The reason Prabhupada mentioned self-sufficiency is that you can run your own life.
You're independent. That's the point. Brahmins are independent. So, means previously people would give donations and charity to them so they could be independent. So if you're not doing that, then you can do it by this natural lifestyle. You're independent. You're not dependent on modern society because it goes up and down. You know, you have land. It doesn't matter if it's worth billions or it's worth nothing. You can still grow cabbages. That's the point. You know? So the thing, you have land, and you can do everything you want. Without land, then nothing happens. But everybody just fights over, you know, the same square meters, you know, like that, you know. You have to get out of a magnifying glass to figure out how much land you're buying, you know. Like this.
The same or as the amount of Lakshmi.
Yeah, yeah. So I give these 3 square millimeters to, you know, my son, and then these 2 to my daughter, and these 10 to, you know, is given to charity for, you know, the, like that. So, it's, you know, it's like that. What to do? So the thing is to get this balance that one can have that sophisticated lifestyle. Krishna's living in a village. They are farming. They are, but even of that, cow protection is more prominent than farming. Right? So when Krishna Goraksha is, means taking care of the cows is the prominent. But generally we look at the farming as the prominent. But it's actually the cows that are the prominent. Right? Because these Nandabhavana, they're growing that, otherwise how are they eating? You don't hear about them importing stuff. So they're growing their own grains and everything. Right. But the focus is on the cows. Like that. But they were living very nice and opulently. But just nowadays people don't know how to do it. So it's a problem.
Recently about this, when you look at just agriculture separately, you have to end up in some kind of upper calm if you don't consider the cow. Because as your fertilizers come in, you feel... That's the main. The gober is the main wealth of the whole system.
Yeah. If you think that milk, actually, milk is the main wealth because that gives you the brains. So who drinks milk?
Okay, if you think
right,
about
it means a double espresso doesn't have any milk in it. you know, in the evening you're Manhattan. There's no milk in it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. Is there's no milk, so there's no brain.
Okay.
So the milk is the main, and then your the cow dung is then, you know, that very beneficial from that side. But the real reason the cow is special is because of milk. Because the milk is then gives the proper intelligence, the milk is what's used in all the sacrifice, you know, all the yajna, like that, you know, because the milk is used, the ghee is used, you know, all the yoga, all the, means all the rituals require all that. You know, the Didi Rusha requires that. You know, despite modern pop, you know, the modern concept. Krishna likes butter, right? You know, that. And he's doing okay. He's not looking overweight. You know? This whole idea, you know, everything makes you fat. You know, breathing makes you fat. You know? Right?
Yeah, calories.
Yeah, yeah. Think of all the calories. You know? Where, you know, what are you doing? Watching my calories.
Maharaj, when you run the cow program based on milk, I mean, if you're selling the milk and not taking it, that's as you mentioned. It seems to go bankrupt. Because I mean, the selling of the milk is the main primary thing. It seems to go bankrupt.
No, but because selling the milk's not the main thing. You're supposed to do things with the milk.
Yeah, that's...
You know, the point is this milk doesn't last either. So it's, you know, your ghee, that lasts. You know, like you said, all the other things. Hello. We almost made it.
Mars, they worked it out and they did a presentation about the cows and the Bangladesh from the manor. You know, I don't know if it's the same. They have there's only like four herbs in the swamp that are like, you know, joy and keeping their heads above water kind of thing. He was saying milk is 3.60 per liter that they produce. And in the supermarket, 60 pence. So it's like six times. So they worked out a system where the community would you sponsor a cow, and then that way you can bring down the price. You know, they're given to the cow protection process, and then they can bring down the price. And it's all, you know, the deities is all from their cows, and it's also in Soho Street, it's all from their cows as well. We're actually starting to reconnect the milk.
Mm, good. Yeah. See, the point is if you keep at it, then you get something. We were just discussing the point of that it's only if you're just doing farming, that's varnashram. But that's one part of Vaishya, right? And then you have, you know, the other parts of Vaishya, and then you have Shudra, Kshatriya, Brahman, and you have Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. That's varnashram. Right, so the discussion was that they're only taking the farming part of it or the cow part of it, and then if you're doing that, that's varnashram. No, that's that part of varnashram for those people. You know what I'm saying? Vaishyas are supposed to take care of cows, no one else. You know what I'm saying? On an economic level, you know, like that. So farming, that's supposed to be done by Vaishyas. So that's what they should be doing. So if it's not going on, that's the Vaishya's fault. But all the Vaishya's are making money. We've got millionaires in our movement. They're making money. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's going on. But it's not that the interest is in that. It's all in trade or in banking. So it's just expand that. You know, it's not that you don't do the ones. You can do these other things also. You know, I mean, most business people have many things going on. They don't just do one. You know, but then to say if the Brahmins aren't farming, then it's not Brahmin. The Kshatriyas, no, they're not supposed to. The Vaishyas are supposed to, right? And the Shudras are supposed to help. So that's the difficulty, is that it's seen so narrowly that therefore only a particular group can get involved. Therefore, Varnashram has nothing to do with anybody else. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's the thing. Okay, so, yeah, just to finish. Okay. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Karma yogi, jnana yogi, or jnana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it is to be understood he has surpassed all other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of Himalayan, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. Right? So of all the different processes, yoga is the best. And of yoga, then bhakti yoga is the best. So of all the mountains in the world, the Himalayas are the biggest. And of that, then Everest is the biggest. Okay. So, we almost made it. I guess we haven't discussed Varnasha for so long because it doesn't come up like that. You know, it's just, you know, need for variety.
It's too kind of shabby, right?
It's been pretty dry all these days. You need some good issue, you know, like that. You know. How do you make an issue out of, you know, trying to figure out what the soul is? I mean, yeah.
Sorry.
Huh? No. I mean, others are very enthusiastic too. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gauru Prevanandi. Yeah, because you have to connect the stuff back into practical what's going on in life. So that's there.
Yeah.
It's always such a... But I always find it always amusing. Varnashram simply means farming and cows. Yeah. We can't see how to apply it in the city, you know. And it's not a problem if people focus on the farms. That's great because you need them. But it's not that. But because most people are in the cities and most people prefer to be there, that they should know how to follow Varnashram in the city. You know, they should know that a bureaucrat is not a kshatriya. You know, a bureaucrat's not a brahmin. The bureaucrat's a shudra. So then, by knowing that, then Varnashram starts to work. Then you know, when it comes, push comes to shove between the philosophy and the bureaucrat says this and the Brahmin says that, then whose opinion do you take? That's Varnashram. You know, that's practical for most everybody.
My life.